listening to the Philanthropisms Podcast with Rodri Davis. Hello, you're listening to the Philanthropisms Podcast. This is the podcast where we try to put philanthropy in context. I'm your host, as ever, Rodri Davis, and this week we have another great conversation, and it's with Sarah Lomelin. Now, Sarah is the CEO of Philanthropy Together, which is an organisation based in the US, which exists essentially to bring together giving circles and to try and kind of share knowledge and experience and build a community around the idea of collective giving. And so I sat down with Sarah quite recently to have a conversation all about collective giving and identity and philanthropy and the kind of intersection between those things. So we talked, you know, about what Philanthropy Together does and the idea of giving circles. We talked a bit about what giving circles are and who it is that forms them and what they do. So what kinds of people and groups form giving circles? Do they appeal more to certain groups, whether that's younger donors, women or marginalised groups? And what kinds of models do they use? What sort of approaches are they taking? How do they make decisions when it comes to distributing resources? We also talked about the relationship between identity and community and philanthropy. So an interesting question to me, which I asked Sarah, is about whether when we're talking about collective models of giving, do you need to have a pre-existing shared sense of identity in order to come together and give? Or does the act of coming together and giving create that sense of community and identity? Or is it a bit of both? We also talked a bit about the role that place plays in giving people a sense of shared identity and how that is still important, even in an age where the internet allows us to create communities that aren't geographically based. We talked about the importance of learning from other cultures of giving, because one of the things that you quickly see when you look at the world of giving circles is that many of them do reflect much wider cultures of generosity that are linked to immigrant or diaspora communities, and how we can kind of learn from this in the mainstream nonprofit world and perhaps have a little bit more intellectual humility. We also talked about the role that collective giving could play in democratizing philanthropy, whether that's sort of within philanthropy and making it more democratic itself, or whether it's playing a part in kind of assuaging some of the concerns about the role, the anti-democratic role that elite and big money philanthropy plays within society. And we also talked about whether giving circles might allow for funding for more kind of radical, riskier, in inverted commas, groups, social movements and grassroots organisations, precisely because the people involved in the giving circles tend to be part of the same communities as the people on the grounds doing the work, and whether there is a greater knowledge and understanding and trust and therefore an ability to either to take what seem to be bigger risks or for those risks not to seem so big in the first place. So without further ado, I'll stop giving you the summary and let Sarah start doing the talking. I will be back at the end for the usual bit of housekeeping and tidying up. But in the meantime, enjoy. Okay, great. Well, I'm here with Sarah Lomelin. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Rodri. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And it's great to have a chance to talk to you on the podcast. Thanks very much for finding the time. So as people will know from the introduction that they've just heard, and also I'm sure from your name, that you are the founding CEO of Philanthropy Together, amongst many other things. And I'm sure we'll talk about some of those others. So maybe the best place to start is just for you to say a little bit in your own words about what Philanthropy Together is as an organization, how it came about, and what the mission is.
Yes, of course. So Philanthropy Together is on a mission to democratize and diversify philanthropy globally in order to expand who and what gets funded. We do this through storytelling, training, research, and advocacy. And the whole idea is that we want to usher in a new era of philanthropy that is democratic, that is diverse, and it is powered by people acting in solidarity. Our goal is to scale and strengthen all models of collective giving. That's our sweet spot. Giving circle, collaborative funds, fundraising circles, and so many more. And how we came to be in through, you know, collective giving model or giving circle model, we are the brainchild of more than 100 people. So back in 2016, the Collective Giving Research Group was doing a landscape research around about giving circles, right? Around giving circles. And they saw that at that moment, there were about 1,600 giving circles in the US that had involved about 150,000 people in the last 20 years. And those 1,600 giving circles had moved about $1.3 billion with a B. So we said, okay, this is really exciting. And guess what? There, it doesn't exist any organization or a place for all of us that are, you know, working with giving circles and involved in giving circles to get together. So thanks to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, we went into a full co-design year that was led by a group of five women. I was one of those five, but with me, there was Felicia Herman and Liz Fisher from Amplifier, Marsha Morgan from the Community Investment Network, Paula Liang from Philanos, Hallie Lee from the Asian Women's Giving Circle. And all of us were, you know, organized by the brilliant Isis Krause. And after that year, we had hundreds of hours of Zoom calls before Zoom was even popular, by the way. Like we should have, you know, bought stock on Zoom because this was in 2018 and 2019. And then we ended up at a convening at the Gates Foundation with 100 people and walls full of post-it notes because we wanted to hear everybody's, you know, opinions and input. And after that, we came back to the Gates Foundation with a plan for a five-year initiative. And that is what Philanthropy Together is. So we launched on April 1st of 2020, right at the beginning of the pandemic.
Great. And as you say, the aim, you know, the starting point is sort of existing giving circles and trying to bring those together to kind of make connections and bring shared learning together between different giving circles. Because I would assume giving circles often quite reflective of the community that they formed around, whether that's a place-based one or an identity-based one. What did you find initially about how much kind of commonality there was between your different experiences and how much of it was kind of particular to the particular thing that had brought you together?
Well, you know, we have four strategic focus areas, and two of them are to bring new people into collective giving, and the other two to the existing field, right? And as you said, yes, you know, a lot of giving circles, 84% of giving circles give locally. So a lot of these times you have people from the same community that are the members of the giving circle, right? They're supporting their local communities. A lot of the times, you know, there's, and that's the beauty of collective giving, that a lot of the power dynamics get, you know, that they get blurred, right? You kind of get rid of power dynamics because it's really a movement of philanthropy by the people, for the people. And, you know, when I talk about philanthropy, because we know that that word is pretty charged in lots of places, the way we, you know, we think about philanthropy is going back to the roots of the word, right? It's love of humanity. And that is how we understand it. It's about, you know, all kinds of generosity, not only with, you know, with a financial contribution, but really, you know, thinking about the five T's, how you give your time, your talent, your testimony, your treasure, which is a financial contribution, and your tithe, right? Because all of us are part of different networks. And a lot of times the doors that we can open to those organizations or initiatives that we care about are a lot more important than the financial contribution that we can give to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's loads that I want to pick up on about how kind of collective giving fits into some of the wider, you know, debates that are going on about the role of philanthropy at the moment. I guess first, I just wanted to ask a bit about what we know about who it is that gets involved in collective giving and what drives that. So do you have any sense of kind of what the typical donor, if at all there is one, that gets involved in some of the giving circles you're involved with are, and how they might differ from some of the donors that you would find elsewhere? I mean, are they younger? Do you tend to get a different gender balance? Are there any things that you found that this model kind of particularly appeals to particular types of donors?
Great questions. And, you know, it's funny because every time we said when you know one giving circle, you know one giving circle, because the model is extremely, extremely flexible, right? At the same time, and this is very exciting, and I think this is the right timing, that landscape research that I told you about in 2016, we just have, we were refreshing the whole thing. We're updating the whole landscape. So this year, at the beginning of the year, we commissioned it, but Adriana Lozon Ceballo from Colmena Consulting and Michael Layton from the Johnson Center of Philanthropy, they developed a couple of surveys that they put out to the community, right? So we have the surveys, one member survey and one group survey that were out, they were open for about 6 months. So right now they are in the moment of analyzing all that data. I don't have, you know, the official numbers yet because we're going to release that report at the beginning of next year, but it is really encouraging and hopeful for the things that you are mentioning, right? It is a more democratized and diverse field. So it's a field that, yes, the majority of giving circles are led by women. 70% in the 2016 study, and I am guessing it's going to be a similar number this time, of giving circles are led by women. But we see a lot more younger people getting involved. And actually, if I can tell you a story that I love, is of this young woman, 16 years old in Arizona. And her mom was a member of a giving circle and she wanted to do something with her friend. So she got in a mission to recruit 100 teenagers. And actually, she got 180 teenagers from different high schools, and each of them gives $25 a quarter, so $100 a year. And they give grants to organizations that support adolescents and teenagers around mental health, homelessness, and all the things that affect this particular demographic. And every time they get together, you know, they have food, they bring a DJ. So the beauty of giving circles is that literally the group can invent and set their own rules of engagement, right? In terms not only on the culture of their giving circle, but also in the amount of the donation, right? Some giving circles have a minimum donation. A lot of giving circles kind of use this 100th or 1,000, right? Because it's easy. The multiplying is easy. Some giving circles have a minimum amount to give, but not a ceiling. And that is really smart because you don't want to ever leave money on the table. Some giving circles have a sliding scale, right? So depending on how advanced are you in your career or maybe your age, there's some large women's giving circles that, for example, if women are in their 20s, they will be giving, you know, a smaller amount if they are in their 30s or they are in their 40s. There's other giving circles that have very innovative models of giving. Like there is a circle in New York called Rat Fund, and that's a small circle. It's a group of, you know, 12 to 15 friends. They are very focused on social justice in New York. And their model is that each member gives 1% of their annual income and 0.01% of their net worth. So if you think about this one, this is really based in trust, right? Because no one is asking the other person, okay, show me how much are you earning, right? And the whole idea is that it is very equitable. And for every $100,000 more that you earn, for example, if you earn $100,000, you will give 1%. But if you earn $200,000, you will need to give 2%. So, and then, you know, like that. So there, I think the sky is the limit in the way people conceptualize the way they give.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear. And you mentioned a couple of points there about the way in which the model of collective giving potentially sort of democratizes philanthropy. And in part, it seems that's in terms of who is able to, you know, call themselves a philanthropist or engage on the donor side. Does it also extend in what you've seen to how the decisions are made about where the money is given? What kind of models are these giving circles adopting when it comes to deciding, you know, once they've pooled their money, how to get it out again? Because I would assume, you know, they're not suddenly becoming really autocratic and hierarchical. So they must have mechanisms that allow everyone to have a say in where the money goes. And have you seen any interesting examples of that?
Totally. And again, you know, there is a big spectrum of how giving circles, you know, make their decisions, right? Some of them, the smaller ones, do it by consensus. And you know that sometimes, you know, getting to consensus is messy and it's, you know, it takes time. But if your giving circle is small enough that you can get consensus, that's, you know, amazing. And I always said that, you know, the second part of a giving circle is this opening up space for discourse. Because even though you may have, you know, members rallying around and backing the same cause, people may come from different backgrounds, from different, you know, political perspectives, different points of view. And the beauty of a giving circle is that they get a space to talk to one another, to listen to other perspectives, to change their minds, right? Because a lot of times, you know, you come with an idea and after hearing someone else, you change your mind, and it's okay to change your mind because your perspective is getting richer by the perspectives of others, right? So some giving circles do consensus, larger giving circles do, you know, a democratic vote, so everybody votes. The very large giving circles, you know, those that have hundreds of members, usually have different committees. So they may have like a grand committee of about 10, 15 people that are the ones that do kind of like a first pass on, okay, you know, if we have, you know, 30 organizations that we are thinking about, we're not going to put 30 organizations in front of 200 people. What about, you know, we decide on 10 and then we put 10 in front of the people. So some large giving circles do that. On the other hand, and this is, you know, extremely exciting, and especially after the pandemic, we are seeing a lot of solidarity circles, a lot of circles that are doing, you know, participatory grant making. So they are inviting voices from the community to make the decisions. Some of them as part of, you know, vis-a-vis the members of the giving circles. And some of them are literally passing the decision-making to the community. So you have a group of people that are basically getting together, learning together, pulling the money, but the decision of where the money is going is not decided by them, but it's passed to members of the community.
That's really interesting, because that was something I was going to ask, was about whether you'd seen the emergence of any kind of participatory approaches, because it does feel as though, if particularly if you have either a place-based or an identity-based giving circle, and where you have variable levels of wealth, the line between that and almost a kind of mutual aid or solidarity network is quite blurry. So it's really interesting to hear that they are building that into the approaches that they're taking and trying to sort of democratize in that way as well.
Totally. And another thing,
please
move to the next, that's something else that I wanted to say that we have seen in the past few years. Also, you know, giving circles made out of a specific ethnicity or group, but they are giving to another marginalized group. So, for example, there is this giving circle in California called the Lunar Project, and it's a group of Asian American Pacific Islanders. And they are given to Black-led organizations. So that is extremely, again, right? Like, that is where we all want to get to. I feel that, you know, especially in the condition of the world right now, right? What we want is getting back to we're humans, all of us, and we should be taking care of one another. So for me, it's extremely exciting to see these kind of giving circles.
Yeah, and you said earlier about kind of returning to the original definition of philanthropy as love of humanity. And one of the things that I've noticed around this sort of discussion around collective giving is that, as well as democratizing, it does seem to be giving people broader horizons in terms of understanding different cultures of giving from around the world, particularly where you get kind of identity-based communities who might be kind of immigrant communities forming giving circles. And I know Giving Tuesday has done some really interesting work on this. And I saw that Hallie Lee had a great article kind of about different cultures of giving relatively recently. Do you think that's one of the things that you can kind of help push as well in the work that you're doing at Philanthropy Together to try and expand everybody's understanding of, you know, what generosity is and what philanthropy can be, and that actually there are all of these different cultures of generosity from all around the world, and we can learn from each other rather than, I think, just leaning on one quite narrow model of kind of, you know, US, UK kind of philanthropy that I think maybe we have in the past.
Totally. And actually, you know, a big shout out to Hallie Lee, because she's one of the godmothers of Philanthropy Together and a dear friend. And then Giving Tuesday, I have the privilege to serve on the board. And, you know, we partner really closely because it's exactly that. And something that I love about Giving Tuesday is this concept of radical generosity, right? And that it's so, for me, you know, radical generosity is something that it's not about waking up and saying, oh, today I'm going to be generous and I'm going to be doing this and that. It's a way of living. It's how you wake up every morning and you are generous with your smile, with your time, with everything that you offer to the world, right? So definitely there's an opportunity to learn how people are generous and how they give in other parts of the world. Giving circles are not new, and they're not American or they're not Western. Like the whole, you know, concept of people banding together to create change and to take care of one another is as old as, you know, humanity itself. So you see this type of community philanthropy everywhere in the world. And actually, you know, this year, and I'm very excited that next year is going to be even more, we are starting to do a lot more global work. So I just got a call a couple of weeks ago from some partners in Mexico. They're going to do a pop-up giving circle during Giving Tuesday, right? So, you know, united these two parts, also talking to someone in Colombia about the same thing. A few months ago, I had some conversations in Singapore with some folks there, and they just started giving circles to support families. So it's families, so six families go and support another family. So as you said, it's kind of these mutual aid societies, blurred lines of how do we take care of one another. In Africa, we see many, many examples of this. Actually, I went to the Global Summit for Giving Tuesday, and the country leader from, I believe it was Senegal, he said, you know, for us, with the concept of Giving Tuesday at the beginning was hard to grasp, because people were like, what do you mean about one day for giving or one day of generosity? We're always generous. We always give. So the way they do it is the day to celebrate generosity. And imagine when we get to that point, right? Like people are always generous. People are always giving. And we just pick a day to celebrate, but it's not a day to give. And something that I see in other parts of the world is that, you know, here in the US, we have this whole thing with the tax, you know, advantages of giving. In many countries, people don't have that and they still give. So I think it's again, it's going back to thinking the issues and the problems of this world as are so huge, so big, that all of us need to be involved. It cannot be, you know, just a handful of billionaires saying, okay, I'm going to support these causes. We all have to get involved. And, you know, many times they ask me, okay, are you saying that billionaires shouldn't be giving and it's just, you know, giving circles and everyday people? No, by no means. We need everyone to be a philanthropist.
Yeah, and it's really interesting you mentioned that question of sort of elite philanthropy and billionaire philanthropy, because obviously that tends to suck up a lot of the oxygen in terms of discussions, yes, around philanthropy.
Yeah.
And I agree. I think, you know, we need all of it. You know, these are big problems and we all need to play our part. But do you see that there's a role for models of collective giving and giving circles in potentially sort of providing, if not an antidote, a kind of a different approach that can show how maybe we can answer some of the concerns about the fact that if you allow big money philanthropy to dictate, you know, where resources go, it becomes quite undemocratic or sort of anti-democratic. Whereas actually, if we, you know, spread decision-making much more broadly across all of us, suddenly we can kind of be much more positive about the power of philanthropy in society. Do you think, is that part of the narrative as you talk to people about collective giving?
Actually, yes, because, I mean, you may know these statistics, but it is ridiculous where all the money goes and all the causes, you know, with women and girls, like, my God, that percentage doesn't change, right? This 2% of philanthropic dollars go to women and girls. And if you think about, you know, women and girls of color is abysmal, right? Or if you think about, you know, funding going to the LGBTQ community is like 0.3%. Or, you know, Native Americans, it's 0.6%. So really, an indigenous community is actually at the global level is 0.6%. It is infuriating. All of us should get infuriated. And I feel that the power that we have as everyday people, as everyday donors, is collective giving, right? Because there are many things that we don't have control, but where we donate our money, where we, you know, focus our efforts, we can control that. And we can change not only how we give, because as you said, it's like, you know, if we start putting the power of the decision making in the communities, we are also changing what gets funded, right? And I feel that because, you know, very wealthy folks have approached us and say, is there a way that we can partner with giving circles? And I feel that yes, and the big benefit that giving circles can give to, you know, an ultra high net wealth individual is that ultra local focus, right? Because a lot of the small grassroots organizations that get funded by giving circles are totally invisible to big philanthropy. So these, you know, family foundation or these, you know, big foundation is never going to find them. And by partnering with a local giving circle, they can support those small organizations. For a lot of giving circles, you know, giving circles tend to serve as seed funders for very small organizations. Organizations that here in the US, you know, that talk in California, right? Because sometimes I say these amounts of money and they sound huge, but here in California, they are not. You know, with budgets of less than $1 million, less than $500,000, they're tiny, tiny, tiny organizations that are never going to get, you know, a grant from a big foundation because the foundation is not going to find them. So how giving circles come in as seed funders and also kind of giving this, I don't know, kind of like giving that trust to this organization that then, you know, that organization can leverage to get other funding revenues, right? Going to corporations, going to other foundations and saying, we have been supported by, you know, the East Bay Latina Giving Circle for the past couple of years, right? So I think there's many benefits also from the nonprofit side by partnering with giving circles.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask about it, and you touched on it there, that as well as just increasing the visibility and allowing larger funders, whether that's foundations or corporates, to see some of those grassroots organizations, is it also partly that even if they knew who those organizations were, they might think that the risk profile was too high for them to fund, but that's just because they're so far removed from those groups. Whereas a giving circle,
yes,
because they know the people and they, you know, it's not high risk for them to fund it, but then it also sort of confers, I'm not sure legitimacy is the right word, but it kind of, you know, once you've received one gift from an organization that looks, yes, legitimate and trustworthy, suddenly everybody else thinks it's okay to fund you. So,
yes, I love what you said, Rodri, of, you know, they know the people, right? Because,
yeah,
that is it. It's all about relationships.
Mm.
And I feel that that is also something that giving circles, because a lot of times it's the same people from the community. Is that right? Is that proximity and that, you know, going and volunteering and knowing the people that the nonprofit is serving, knowing the other volunteers, the leadership, and especially because, you know, giving circle members get so engaged with the causes that they support that also are the perfect pipeline for being, you know, on the board of these organizations at some point, right? So it's also a civic engagement mini laboratory, if you want to see it like that. People that are, and that is coming also in the, on the, in the research, there is a relationship between being part of a given circle and being civically engaged.
Yeah, I'm absolutely sure. I think that whole idea of, you know, giving or philanthropy as a sort of nursery of democracy, the kind of Tocquevillian idea, I mean, it does work. When it works, it really works. So,
yes.
One of the things I wanted to ask actually was, we were talking there about, you know, giving circles potentially getting money to places that they otherwise wouldn't get to. Does that also extend to different types of organizations or that are kind of working towards different goals? But and by that I mean, you know, one of the concerns, I guess, at the moment around the relationship between philanthropy and more sort of justice focused social movements is that in some people's eyes, philanthropy and particularly kind of institutional philanthropy kind of reflects the status quo and kind of people who have succeeded within that status quo. So it's never genuinely going to want that status quo to be changed fundamentally. Whereas, you know, are giving circles, because they represent more, you know, everyday ordinary people, are they more likely to fund things that, you know, genuinely are seeking to kind of change the status quo in fairly radical ways? Have you seen any examples of that?
Yes, totally, totally. And that is extremely exciting. Actually, you know, we have an initiative called the Social Justice Giving Circle Project that now it's sitting at Justice Funders, but that was the whole idea. Giving circles, they not only support, you know, established 501c3 nonprofit organizations, right? Giving circles support different initiatives, support, you know, movement leaders, support individuals, right? So, and especially with all what has been happening in the world in the last few years, more and more we're seeing giving circles that are going away from the traditional path of supporting an established nonprofit. And I feel that that is something that we also see with younger people. Like, you know, I am the mother of three adult children, right? They are 20, 21, and 24, and they are extremely generous, but they rarely give to establish nonprofit, right? So, and I feel that that is something that, yes, we're seeing more and more. And they're giving circles that are being established specifically to support social justice leaders.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think it is, you know, that sense that younger people definitely are giving, but perhaps in ways that, you know, we're failing to capture. So we're not understanding what giving and generosity looks like, I think is really important. And the other thing it made me think of, which comes back to something you mentioned in passing earlier, when you talked about the potential project in Mexico and them looking at the kind of pop-up model of giving circles, was how many of the giving circles that you're seeing being formed are kind of formed as ongoing organizations, and how many of them are shorter or time limited or a bit more ephemeral? Do you see a mix of those two things? Because it feels as though particularly younger people, again, they're less interested in kind of ongoing relationships with nonprofits or kind of, you know, sticking to established brand relationships. They're more interested in kind of things that are immediate and short-term and responding to need. And I wondered whether that was being reflected in the giving circles that are being formed as well.
There is definitely a mix. So you have, you know, some giving circles that are very established, that they meet, you know, every year, that they give, you know, one round of grants annually or two, and they meet every quarter. So they're definitely the established giving circles. There's also, you know, a lot of one-time off kind of like event type giving circle. Actually, in the UK is the funding network, and they have giving circles in many different places in the world, and it's kind of like event based. So you come, you, and that day you give, and you know, some people may come to the next event in a few months, and some people may not come, right? And these type of giving circles are great to give taste of how, you know, how a giving circle work. It's the same as, you know, like a pop-up giving circle. Actually, a pop-up giving circle is you go through all the stages of a giving circle in 90 minutes, right? It's great to bring in new people. And the whole idea of that is that from there, people will get kind of hooked, and then they will decide to do one long-term. But, you know, I feel that everything depends on the culture of each circle. I am part of a giving circle here in San Francisco that it's inside of a social club. And I love it because there's so much potential there to do this. This is the only social club in the world that has a philanthropic arm. And so I'm imagining, right? Like, how many social clubs are in New York or in London? Like, we should have giving circles in all of them. But the way battery powered, which is really cool, it works is they are three themes picked every year. So even though it's an established giving circle, there are different themes completely every time. So people are learning from different causes, different organizations. So it's really dynamic. And they're about, you know, 550 members, and they're about $3 million moved every year. So it's a pretty, you know, powerful giving circle. At the same time, you know, I'm also a member of the Latina Peninsula giving circle. We're a small circle. We're 25 women, most of us Latinas, and we give to Latino-led nonprofit organizations in our county, right? So it's very specific. Every year, our first, you know, meeting of the year, we sit down and we review what worked, what didn't work the previous year. And we review also our funding priorities. And we decide if we're going to keep them or, you know, move to another cause. Okay, we have been together for almost 10 years. We have not moved funding priorities. Why? Because, yes, I mean, we have become very close to the organizations on the ground that, you know, work in the causes that we care about, right? So we have become kind of like a family with the organization. So it's more now like, okay, let's review the funding priorities, but we know that we're going to keep them. So I think it depends on the culture of the circle.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I wanted to ask actually, because you talked there about the fact that the focus of that giving circle was within the county. So again, it has kind of a pretty tight geographic range. And you said, you know, the majority of giving circles that you were seeing were geographic in nature or kind of locally focused. Have you seen any where they are identity-based to some extent? And some of that giving might also be focused locally, but there's also a kind of diaspora element as well, where they're doing some or you know, or potentially all of their giving based on a kind of shared identity, but with people who are elsewhere in the country or potentially even outside of the country.
Yes, totally, totally. There are many, and you know, I think you can find giving circles with every single ethnicity or, you know, type of faith possible, right? They are API giving circles, giving to local API communities. You have, you know, Muslim American giving circles, giving abroad or giving here, Jewish giving circles, giving here in the US or giving to organizations in Israel. You have Native American giving circles. So it's everything that you can imagine exists. As I was saying also, you know, maybe identity-based giving to another identity-based or these types of solidarity grants, right? There was this instance a few years ago when the murder of George Floyd happened that the Los Angeles Latino Giving Circle got together with a Black Lab Giving Circle in LA to support Black organizations, right? Because it was needed at that moment. And then, you know, a few months later, there was this need to support street vendors in Los Angeles that they're, you know, mainly Latinos. And the Black Giving Circle came to support that with the Latino Giving Circle. So there's a lot of, you know, interaction. And that is, I feel, what gives me hope that by having an organization like Philanthropy Together, where we support with, you know, free trainings and resources and videos and everything under the sun to every person that is, you know, involved in a giving circle, no matter where in the world, that people can connect and find one another and not having to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm aware I'm in danger of taking up far too much of your time, so I just have a couple more questions. One of them, I think, that I wanted to ask, because it's, you know, we've talked quite a lot about you know, identity, which is obviously an important element of bringing people together to form giving circles or other collective giving models. But is there also a possibility that in places or you know, wherever for some reason identity is no longer felt strongly, maybe, you know, that is a place or within a particular group, you can use collective giving to bring people together and try and forge a sense of identity, so it kind of goes the other way around? Have you ever seen that happen, where kind of those ties of identity are relatively weak, and then through engagement in collective giving, people form a much stronger sense of community and identity?
Totally. For example, you know, the group at Battery Powered, right? It's a social club, but people come from, you know, many different identities, many different backgrounds, and they are part of the giving circle. And what brings them together is that, you know, desire of, you know, do something for the San Francisco community, right? Also, you know, a lot of the women's giving circles, even though, yes, you know, it's identity because it's women, you have women from, you know, many different backgrounds and ideas. And some, you know, in some of the identity-based giving circles, you see people that are allies, right? That they may not share the same identity, but they want to be part of it to support that community. So we see many cases like that. There's also, you know, a big network, because that I forgot to mention. They exist many networks of giving circles. And one of these networks is called the States Project, and it's a network of political giving circles. So there you have people that also, you know, many different identities and ethnicities come together towards a different goal, right?
Yeah, really, really fascinating. I'm going to let you go at this point, but I just wanted to give you a chance. Well, first of all, to say thank you ever so much for finding time to come on the podcast. It's really great to talk and really sort of fascinating to hear about the work you're doing. But just a chance, you know, if you've got particular things coming up that you wanted to make people aware about in terms of what's coming up next for plans for Philanthropy Together, or your thoughts on kind of what you would like to see more broadly happen in philanthropy, you know, over the coming year.
Well, I just want to invite everyone to, you know, engage with us. Every single resource that we have on our website is free of charge. We have a great website called whatisagivingcircle.com, and we have it in four different languages. It's in English, Spanish, Mandarin, German. It's coming up in the next few weeks in Portuguese. A lot of our, you know, materials are also in different languages. So just inviting everybody to join us. We have trainings every month around, you know, how you start your own giving circle. We have a big directory of global giving circles to find one that is near you. And if you don't find one, you can start your own with these trainings that we have. We have trainings for individuals. We have trainings for organizations. So community foundations, faith-based organizations, et cetera, et cetera. We have a training specifically for nonprofits that want to use the model of a giving circle with, you know, their within their ecosystem. And also, you know, and very exciting is this year we have started working with collaboratives and collaborative funds to try to foster the growth of this very nascent field. So again, you know, we have a bunch of articles and resources on our website, and I would invite everybody to come and take a look. Our website is philanthropytogether.org, and I'm, you know, happy to answer any questions and to email everybody that email us.
And I will put links in the show notes for this episode to places where people can find all of that information easily. And I, you know, thoroughly recommend that people go and check it out. It just remains to say thanks ever so much, Sarah. It's been a real pleasure talking and, you know, wish you all the best with your work with Philanthropy Together.
Thank you so much, Rodri. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Okay, great. Well, my thanks again to Sarah for coming on the podcast. It was great to have a chance to talk to her and hear about the work that she's doing with Philanthropy Together. I will put links in the show notes to places where you can find much more detail on what Philanthropy Together does. And if you're inspired to go out there and form your own giving circle, or find out if there's a pre-existing giving circle near you that you could join, you'll be able to do that. If you're interested more broadly in issues around philanthropy and civil society, do check out my website at whyphilanthropymatters.com, where you can get lots of articles and bits of news all about philanthropy and civil society. You can get all the back episodes of this podcast, and you can sign up for our monthly newsletter, which brings you all the kind of latest news and insights on what's going on in the world of philanthropy around the globe. If you've got ideas for people that you think would be good to talk to on the podcast, or topics that we could take a deep dive into, do drop me a line. You can find my contact details on the website. If you're interested in slightly pithier, kind of more digestible content, do follow me on social media. I'm spending an increasing amount of time on LinkedIn, as a lot of people are. I'm still just about on the you know, the dying embers of Twitter, and I'm also experimenting on Threads and Blue Sky and various other places. So please do come and find me in any of those places. Other than that, just like, subscribe, tell anyone that you think might be interested in the podcast about it. Leave us a nice review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. And I will see you next time. Bye!